WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia. The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear my...
Good afternoon and welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley. I'm the host here in the studio, and with me is Ada Nestor, who's going to join us again today. And you've been now with us since we started changing a little bit since Don left in June. So
summer, beginning of the summer.
Yeah. So you,
it's August. It's the middle of August. I feel like June took forever, and July and August just
disappeared
into the other. So here we are.
It's amazing.
Middle of August.
So it's been great to have you here in the studio doing these shows. So thank you for joining us. Today, we've got some interesting things lined up, as we always try to have. The first thing we're going to hit a little later in this first half hour is Beth Ann Rossica, who has a long history in education and writes a lot of really good articles at Broad and Liberty, is going to come on and talk about an article she just broke on Broad and Liberty. That's the news website you can find in Philadelphia at broadandliberty.com. She's going to come on and talk about Title IX, these changes that the Biden administration has tried to implement and force into the schools. There's a fight over that, and that fight involves a group called Moms for Liberty. Some of you know about Moms for Liberty. At 12:30, Shannon Grady, the Chester County chair of Moms for Liberty, will join us and discuss the status of this litigation that Moms for Liberty launched to try to stop the administrative branch, the executive branch, the Biden administration, from implementing this unilaterally in schools. So there's some litigation that's been happening, and Shannon is going to bring us up to speed on what Moms for Liberty has been able to accomplish with that to try to protect the rights of women and girls. So I think this is a really incredibly important thing, especially as we start running into the new school year here.
Yeah.
For families. At 1 o'clock, we're going to have Joel Griffiths from the Heritage Foundation. You've heard Joel now for several weeks, joining us to help us unravel the mysteries of Bidenomics. And, you know, it is indeed a mystery, because we continue to see this economy is doing great, and we're told it's fabulous. And yet, when you look at the actual numbers and look behind the numbers the government's putting out and then revising downward, I mean, look at the real numbers and what they really mean. It turns out American families aren't doing so well.
We're struggling.
Yes.
Struggling across the board.
So it's this incredible tale of two worlds, where on one hand, you know, everything's great and the Biden team has stopped inflation. Apparently that's over, and done these wonderful things. And yet American families are in increasing desperation and really struggling under increasing loads of debt. So Joel will come on and help us kind of unravel this Bidenomics miracle that we're being sold as part of the Kamala mania. Kamala mania.
I know.
And around 1:30, then we're going to fade into another discussion. We may go a little long with Joel, but then we're going to go into discussion about the other current issues of the day. And, you know, certainly folks that have calls that would like to call and comment, that'd be a great time to do it. If you can't get in before or you've got something that you'd like to add, please give us a call. Now, you can join this conversation by dialing 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. So call at any time and let us know what you think. Now, we did a Keystone Town Hall last night in Malvern. It was a great discussion. And again, I'm always impressed by the people that come to these town halls, because they all know a lot. And
right.
So it becomes this really open back and forth dialogue with the audience, and we just learn more, and it's a great chance for people to come together and discuss these kinds of issues that we're all dealing with and trying to explain to the people around us, and to learn how to do that in a way that's more effective and just sort of unravel the mysteries, as I talked about a moment ago, and do it in a setting where people can have an open conversation. So these town halls are a great time. But we did one last night and hit a couple of really key topics. Of course, one of those was the anniversary of the Afghanistan exit.
Jeez.
I mean, it is
3 years. We just, before we got on air today, we were talking about it being 3 years and how we can barely believe that was 3 years ago this week. And, We have some clips for that to share with you, and we'll go into what really happened that week and where we are today and what the Taliban are up to these days.
So, yeah, we'll touch on that again in that 1:30 hour. And you're right. It is astonishing. It's been 3 years. I was sitting here thinking, what's it been, a year or two?
Yeah.
Three.
Three years.
The pace
think about
of these
everything
things.
We've learned since, I mean, thanks to, you know, podcasters and interviews with people who were there in the field or doing the intense research since, how much money we've sent them. I mean, it's been a 3-year march of funding the Taliban since that catastrophic withdrawal. It's unbelievable now to think what's been going on over these 3 years.
It's hard to imagine. And I touched on that last night. We'll hit this again at the 1:30 hour. But to really understand what the United States government has been doing for the Taliban since the exit, you say this to people and they look at you with stunned disbelief. So it'll be interesting. We'll touch on this again at 1:30 when we've got a little more time.
And why are we talking about this? Because we've had an open southern border for almost 4 years now. And those two things are related and relevant, and we'll hit that later.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the invasion is something. And interestingly, in the news this week, Hungary, which has refused to surrender its border, they've refused to drop their defenses,
right.
And they've actually deported people who are not Hungarian citizens.
Yep.
And for some reason in Europe, that's now a crime.
Yep.
So the EU, it turns out, is fining them. I think the fines now aggregate to about $200 million. It's something like $1 million a day. So think about this. This group of lunatics in Brussels is demanding that the government of Hungary drop its national defenses, drop its immigration and customs and border patrol kinds of entities, whatever those are called, those agencies. Drop all of that. Allow anyone that wants to come from anywhere in the world to come in unvetted and not deport them. And if they don't do that, this bizarre group of lunatics in Brussels is fining them $1 million a day.
And they're supposed to do that with what is going on in the UK and what is going on in France and what is going on in Spain as the backdrop. They know how it ends. They can see for themselves how it will end if they open their doors and are protecting their citizenry, unlike these other countries. It's wild to expect them to be so self-destructive. And it brings up the question why these other countries have been so willing to be so self-destructive.
Well, it is. And then, you know, we're to believe that this is any desire to protect your country and its citizens is insane and racist.
Nationalist,
and bigoted.
Like it's a bad word.
Yeah, populist, nationalist. Yep. It's somehow evil. And yet it's got widespread support. So Viktor Orban, the president of Hungary.
Hungary's Trump, as they call him.
Because, yeah, that's right.
You know, what an insult. Go on.
He created a new right-wing alliance in Europe. Yep. Called the Patriots for Europe. And it's right now, it's the third largest group in the EU Parliament.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. You know, this is so unpopular and it's so extreme. And yet 1/3 of the parliament in the EU is now on that team, which is a little bit like the Freedom Caucus we have in the U.S. House, right. And the Pennsylvania House. It's a little bit like the group of Republican senators in Pennsylvania's legislature that protect us from the radicalism of the Democrat Party here, right? And remember, if that line of support ever fades, if that ever goes down, this state is going to change.
Absolutely.
It'll be 12 months and we don't look like Hungary now, but we will look like, you know, the burning Paris and the riots in England. We'll be California within 12 months if we lose that majority in the Pennsylvania Senate. So that is the only thing, you know, drive me crazy when they were talking about Josh Shapiro as a potential vice president candidate and hearing people on Fox News say, well, he sounds like, you know, he's a progressive, but he rules as a moderate. There's nothing moderate about him.
No.
He is a progressive. And the only reason he's not ruling as a radical is because there's a defensive line standing in the Senate protecting us from his extreme political views. And in the House, we've lost that advantage. So now we've got that stalwart group.
We gave it away.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. So there's this stalwart group of patriots in the House, the Freedom Caucus, who are leaning into the fight and are willing to take on these Democrats. But there are Republicans who side with the Democrats in some of this radical legislation. So our line of protection in Pennsylvania is truly dependent upon this small group in the House that's fighting back and exposing things, and a thin line of a majority in the Pennsylvania Senate. If that changes, this state will transform in 12 months.
Yeah.
So, and we'll We'll touch on that in coming weeks as we go through some of the legislation. We do this from time to time. We'll cover the legislation that's pending in the Pennsylvania House, and it's shocking to people. So Shapiro, of course, was considered, he's gone, and they get Waltz, and hence is the launch of Kamala Mania. And we're told the economy's great. She's apparently responsible for that, but she's not really responsible for the policies. She was, of course, the border czar. If you look at Axios, there are articles where Axios calls her the border czar.
She was the deciding vote on the Inflation Reduction Act. She was the deciding vote. She cannot go separate herself from these policies. When her administration starts in 2025, sweetie, your administration started January 20th, 2021, and we've all bore witness to it. We've seen what you can do. You're promising these things now. You're going to fix the inflation. You're going to fix the spending problems. Oh, that's
interesting. Well, so you have to keep this paradox in your head, where on one hand, she's the part of everything that has
good,
that they're portraying is good.
Yeah.
On the other hand, she really was just vice president. They don't do anything but apparently dance around. So she's got no accountability for anything. And on the border, Axios, in an article they published in 2021, specifically refers to her as the border czar. So on March 24, 2021, it says, "When she speaks for me," Biden said, noting her past work as California's attorney general makes her specially equipped to lead the administration's response. And this is in an article, Biden taps VP Harris to lead response to border challenges.
Yeah.
So then Reuters comes
leftist
out and says,
media, it was all CNN, MSNBC. That's all they called her. They called her the border czar for years because they thought she would do a good job, or at least be able to say she did a good job. And then, yes, there was fact checks. The fact checks stepped into the room in 2024. And what did they say?
Well, Axios on April 14 of 21 says, "Why it matters. The number of unaccompanied minors crossing the border has reached crisis levels. Harris, appointed by Biden as border czar, said she would be looking at the, quote, root causes, unquote, that drive migration." Now, that's, again, April 14, 21. Now, Axios a few days ago, the Trump campaign Republicans have tagged Harris repeatedly with the border czar title, which she never actually had.
Yeah.
Reuters says, "Republicans call Harris a failed border czar. The facts tell a different story." The facts tell a different story in their own article. Now, this is July 31, 2024. Despite Harris's efforts, some 7 million migrants, right, have been arrested illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border under Biden, according to government data, all-time highs that have fueled Republican criticism. Well, guess what? It hasn't fueled Republican criticism.
No.
It has fueled criticism by American citizens everywhere that are asking really important questions. Why have we taken down our border defenses? Why have we not done what every country that survives in history has done, which is defend its borders?
And that's what we've done. We have taken down our border defenses, and not just on our southern border, but on our northern border as well.
And so you've got that issue. And then the American people are saying, well, why is it that somebody who comes here can get a $700 a night hotel stay in the Roosevelt Hotel in Manhattan for 7 consecutive months without paying a dime, while they're getting food money and they're getting travel paid for? They're getting everything they need paid for by the American government. And people say, well, no, it's taxpayers. It's not, because it's just adding to the debt.
Right.
Taxpayers right. are not writing checks to pay these bills. If they were, none of this would be happening.
Exactly.
But for the debt, none of this would be allowed to happen. So you've got this Kamala mania that starts, and they begin developing what we've been calling for several months, the hero narrative. So now we're told she's beating Trump. They come out with an article the other day that says that Harris is establishing The Guardian. Polls show Kamala Harris building lead over Trump in 2024 election. Democrat candidate 2.1 points over Trump in 538's national average. Okay, so she's 2 points ahead of him. Now, how has she been doing in general as vice president? If you look at some polling that was done in December of 2021, she had a favorable rating by 39% of the population. She had, in July of 2024, that went from 39% to 41%, a 2% increase. That's it. So 41%, as this whole Kamala mania was building, 2% more said, oh, I like her suddenly.
So keep in mind that these polls are being done to people who have not heard her explain a policy outside of the one she takes from other candidates, apparently, like removing the taxes on tips. There's no policy positions. She's not doing any interviews. And she is not doing any press conferences. So, yeah, honestly, if they can keep her in a closet and not put her in front of other people or microphones or a slightly acrimonious press, they'll probably be able to keep this illusion going for some time.
Yeah, but yeah, that's right. They will. But these polls are fake.
Yes.
Right? So now you've got, in December of 2021, 57% viewed her unfavorably. There's some what are very, but unfavorably. In July, it becomes 56%.
Yeah.
So you've seen a 1% change there. The numbers haven't substantially moved in the polls. To your point, no one's heard her speak of anything important.
Right.
You know, she has cut back on the cackling, which I think is a quite an accomplishment for her.
Well, multiple events that she just had in the last 48 hours, 36 hours, have been interrupted and interfered with Palestinian protesters.
Yeah, there you go.
So next week should be interesting.
And, you know, Harris does a poll on border policy, July 31, 48% rate her as poor. But they also do a right direction or wrong track poll that we've all heard about for many times. Their August 12 right direction, wrong track poll says 61% of voters say wrong track. So you're telling me that 61%, not a majority, a very significant majority of voters, think that we're on the wrong track. And yet a majority of voters think they're going to vote for her as president. It's not possible.
Right.
So my point is that while people are becoming upset that this Kamala mania is real and the Fox News and the others are talking about it all day long about how great she's doing and what an amazing amount of energy, but it's not true. The people that are living in cities watching bodies pile up from fentanyl and violence, the people that are watching the unrest that's building in Europe and other places, that are seeing the world on fire in Europe and the Middle East, they're not suddenly confused because this is a female who's not Caucasian.
Not at all.
It's not working. So the point is, I guess, everyone should just keep their shoulder to the wheel. Let's get to November and see what the outcome is. The battle is raging. It's a real battle, but it's not lost. And we should stay on it and stay positive. Because truth be told, I think the American side on this thing, because I see it as the American side versus the leftist and globalist side, the American side is winning.
I think so, too.
Now, one of the things that the Harris-Biden administration has done is this crazy Title IX
rewrite
change.
Yep.
And it has, I think, significant implications for the rights of women and girls. And so Beth Ann Rossiga, who we mentioned at the opening, has done an article in Broad and Liberty. And Beth Ann joins us now to kind of talk us through what she was reporting in that article and what's going on. Beth Ann, welcome to The Conservative Voice.
Great to be on the show today, Gary and Ada. Thank you so much.
So tell us, you know, you wrote a great article, and it's important that people can get access to and really understand this. I'll tell you, when I hear Title IX, it's just confusing to me. It's not something I've studied in my life. And suddenly it's everywhere. So I start looking at it. I'm like, it doesn't make sense what they're doing. It's not logical. Tell us what's in your article. What's happening right now? What's the current update?
Sure. So just as a quick precursor to the article that I did this week about the court injunction, I had done an article a couple of weeks ago just sort of laying out what the Title IX rewrite really means. And basically, from my perspective, it just strips away the rights from women and girls that we have all fought very, very hard for. I'm 57 years old. I have been a beneficiary of the Title IX regulations and how it's helped me to be able to accomplish many, many things in my life. And I see the changes that the Biden administration is trying to implement as really war against women and girls. And, you know, we're 50% of the population. So we should be speaking up and demanding that what is happening is absolutely wrong. In a nutshell, the new regulations seek to expand the term sex to include gender identification. And that's really the hot button issue here. So under the new Title IX rules, if you identify as a gender different from your biology, then you are now afforded protection under Title IX. And these regulations went into effect, these newly rewritten regs went into effect in August this month. And Moms for Liberty, a nationwide organization, along with four states and two other national organizations, filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, the Department of Education, to basically stop them from implementing these new regulations, claiming that they are a violation of the Constitution. And what happened was, I think nothing short of amazing, that the lawsuit was filed and then they filed for an injunction to prevent these regulations from being enforced until the court could hear the case. Because as you know, the legal system is very slow and backed up, and it could take months and months, even years, before the case is settled. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think that this is going to be settled until it goes to the Supreme Court, but you know, that's a different story. But basically what this injunction does is that for any school, not district, but any school that has a Moms for Liberty member, that school is not, the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, is not able to enforce these new regulations in that school. And so this is a really, really big deal. In the local area in southeastern Pennsylvania, just about every school district will be impacted by this injunction, because almost every school district has at least one, if not more, schools that have Moms for Liberty members. And so the U.S. Department of Education will not be able to enforce those rules in those schools.
I have a question that just occurred to me based on how you just worded all of that. If the schools were to go ahead and adopt the policies that were changed in the Title IX changes on their own accord and not via pressure from the U.S. Department of Education, would that bypass the injunction?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, yeah. Ada. And there are already school districts that have enacted policies that are in line with the new Title IX regulations. And many of these districts wrote those policies to be compliant with the new Title IX rules. Hmm. So I think that it is unclear right now whether those local policies would be impacted by this injunction. The injunction is specific that the Department of Ed, the United States Department of Ed, cannot enforce these policies in those schools. It is unclear whether the local school districts could enact those policies on their own. But I think that if they attempt to do that, which some of them already have, like Perkiomen Valley, for instance, has already enacted a policy that is consistent with the new Title IX regs. I think that they have to be transparent to taxpayers and to parents that they are doing this on their own and not because the United States Department of Education is forcing them to do so.
Timing might suggest otherwise, though, even if they claim they're doing it on their own volition, I guess.
Yes, correct, correct. And that's why, you know, I mentioned in my article, I'm not a member of Moms for Liberty. I don't agree with everything that their platform is about, but I think it's huge what they've done. This is a huge win for, you know, girls and women all over the country. But it, you know, for parents who are concerned about these regulations being implemented in their schools, they can join Moms for Liberty. There's not a charge. I know that Shannon Grady from the Chester County chapter will be on shortly, but all the counties in southeastern Pennsylvania have chapters. You can join. It's free. And you can put your school that your child attends on the list. And then the United States Department of Education cannot enforce those rules in their school.
You talked about community outreach, or I guess outrage, over the injunction for the Title IX changes. And I know in Westchester we've seen some of that. At this point, they only believe or think that Greystone is the single building affected, but that is obviously clearly incorrect. I appreciate that your article goes into more information on how many schools have been included, because there is that misinformation out there, so that other parents know that they're not alone in taking this stand by joining Moms for Liberty to allow for this injunction to go into effect in their school building.
Well, I think it's the one of the fascinating pieces of this injunction, and I read both the initial court order and the supplemental court order that were issued in this case. And it's very clear that the injunction is not limited to a point in time. And I think that's what school districts are confused about, because Moms for Liberty has submitted three lists that are now public information that show all the schools that have members. And the example that you gave in Westchester Area School District, only one school, Greystone Elementary, was listed on that court filing. However, the second court order states very clearly that it's not a moment in time, that members can join Moms for Liberty at any moment, and the order is inclusive of prospective members. Anybody that joins at any time is then included. And I know that Shannon will probably talk about this when she comes on. She has a long list of schools in Chester County that already have members, and so they are also included in this injunction. And, you know, to be fair, I understand why school districts might be confused, because they're looking at these lists and they say, oh, well, only this one school is on there. However, because the court order is very clear that it includes prospective members, if I were a superintendent or if I were on a school board, I would be reaching out to Moms for Liberty and saying, hey, can we get a list of schools where you have members,
right,
so proactive, that we understand what the impact is, and so that we are not violating the injunction that has been issued. That is what I would do. And it's actually, I found it almost comical when I read the second court order, because the attorneys for the U.S. Department of Education argued that, you know, by allowing prospective members, it would basically create chaos for school districts. And I, as I just said, I agree with that. But the judge in this instance was so clear about how much he did not care about that problem that he basically, he wrote in the court order that, you know, yes, you're complaining that this is going to wreak havoc. Well, the Congress gave you the authority to postpone the effective date of the final review of the final rule pending judicial review. And he wrote, maybe DOE should use that authority.
And they
so the judge basically said, you've got a remedy for this. You don't have to create chaos. You can delay the implementation of this. But the Biden-Harris administration doubled down and said, nope, we're going to move forward, and we don't really care about the chaos that this creates for school districts.
No, and of course they don't care, because this isn't really about helping students. This is about implementing an ideology that is, in their world, is a religion. It is the religion of this group, that this woke religion that they desperately want to implement. And if it's a school district that has 11 schools and they can do it in 9 of them, they're going to do it in 9. If they can do it in 2, they want it done in 2. And of course, I think, you know, going to school board meetings and listening to some of these school boards, if you have these radical school boards, which penetrate most of Southeast Pennsylvania, I think there are a couple that don't have radicalized school boards, but most of them do, they share that woke religion. So this idea that you can't have religion in school is long gone. This is their religion, and they will implement it, and they will use government to do so. And chaos, well, that just comes with the territory.
Well, they'll blame it on Moms for Liberty. They'll blame the chaos on those who brought the suit, not the Department of Education, for holding back.
Right. Yeah, that's
correct,
true.
Correct. Yeah. And the school districts, because listen, school districts, just like when we dealt with the masking issue, just like when we dealt with the school closure issue, school boards could stand up and do the right thing and refuse to comply with this garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, time and time again, they refuse to do that. They haven't learned their lesson, and I don't think that they ever will. And you're absolutely right that, you know, the parents, particularly, you know, the crazy parents out here in Westchester who set up the petition to and I found this funny, that these parents think that the school district can override a court injunction by saying, we're not going to you know, follow the injunction. We're going to implement the rules as we were told to do, even though a court told us not to. But that's, you know, the insanity of this group, that these people just want what they want, and they're just so brainwashed that they don't even understand the pawns that they actually are in this game.
Change.com petitions definitely do not override court orders.
Really?
I don't know if anyone hadn't told them that or what happened here, but I mean, it's cute that you think everyone's extremists that don't agree with you, but good luck with your change.org petition, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think it's just virtue signaling. That's really what it comes down to. It's like the people who still wear masks when they're walking around outside in the middle of the day.
Well,
it's
monkey
virtue
pox.
Signaling.
You know, monkeypox.
Right, exactly. Right. So and we've got high COVID rates. Right
oh,
now.
I've heard
so,
yes, that too.
Let's,
yes.
Let's get back to all of that stuff. But really, the change.org petition, this is virtue signaling by a bunch of, you know, stay-at-home moms who have nothing else to do, nothing to preoccupy their time. And so they just want to make themselves relevant and important and make a statement. That's all of this.
And it's a weird thing to think that it's virtue signaling to try to implement these rules, because there's nothing really virtuous about them. But in this religion of wokeology, that becomes virtue. I'm forcing this religion upon children, therefore I'm virtuous.
Yes. And they believe that. To their core, they believe that they are doing the right thing, just like the person who's wearing two N95 masks outside in the middle of the day. They believe that they're doing the right thing.
Yes, and they want to be
which
seen.
Which is even more frightening.
It is. Right. It really is.
More frightening.
It's just incredibly clear evidence of the power of the propaganda that this nation is subject to every moment. So
I agree. And like I said, I'm thrilled with Moms for Liberty for stepping up and taking this on, the other organizations that joined, the four states. You know, sadly, in Pennsylvania, not only did Pennsylvania not join this lawsuit, they were writing amicus briefs on the other side about why it absolutely has to be implemented right away. And the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission, they've all doubled down, as I noted in my article, saying that, you know, we are going to implement fully here in Pennsylvania, even despite the court order, which again puts school districts, you know, in a very confusing situation, because the state government is also saying we're not going to follow this court order.
And that goes back to a comment we had earlier in this discussion today where, you know, it is said on places like Fox News that Josh Shapiro governs as a moderate. The only reason he does that is because there's a thin line of resistance in the Senate, in the legislature, because of a Republican majority in that chamber. And if that were to go away, the state would be implementing the most radical legislation as fast as it could, and there would be a transformation. We wouldn't recognize this state in 12 months. This is evidence of that. They didn't choose to stay silent. They didn't choose to defend the girls and the girls' rights to protect these girls. They chose to come in hard on the woke side and push this ideology into more schools and in opposition to what a court has said.
Exactly. And Gary, I would disagree with you on one point. Josh Shapiro does not govern moderately, and I agree that the Senate helps keep things a little bit more at bay, but he is as progressive as Waltz, as Harris, as Biden. When you look at the fact that he talks out of both sides of his mouth, he says that he supports vouchers for school choice, but when it comes down to it, he does not. I was looking at some information online yesterday that he has a website where for the state that if a therapist tries to engage in conversion therapy, this is for kids that are gender confused, a therapy that tries to help them acknowledge the biological gender that they are. They call that conversion therapy. If a therapist engages in conversion therapy, you can report them on a website and they can risk losing their license as a therapist. He is a hardcore conservative who pretends to be a moderate. And anybody that thinks otherwise is just deluding themselves. Yeah. Yeah, he is a progressive.
Hardcore progressive. He's a hardcore progressive. Portrays himself as a moderate. Well,
yes,
Bethann, this was a great article, and you know we love a lot of the work you're doing on Broad and Liberty is fantastic because you're really helping people put into context and with facts the things that we're hearing, but maybe sometimes can't clearly see. So I really appreciate the work you're doing, and this was a great piece. So I would recommend that people go to Broad and Liberty and read your piece. What is the title of the article? Do you remember the?
Yes, it's called The Fight for Girls' Rights Continues with Title IX Stalemate. If you go to broadandliberty.com and if you just search under my last name, Rossica, R-O-S-I-C-A, it'll come right up. It's the first article.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for that, and thank you for joining us here on The Conservative Voice to have this conversation.
Thanks so much, you guys. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
It is great to see people getting in the fight and taking this on because this is a really important thing for these girls. And I really think that when you say Title IX, a lot of America doesn't know what Title IX really truly means.
I think women do.
Women might. Uh-huh. Men don't, I don't think.
Women of my age, maybe.
Well, maybe. And, but I just don't think it's all as well known as you like. And this group, Moms for Liberty, is a nationwide group that's formed up with county chapters all over the country. And we're lucky in Southeast Pennsylvania to have one of the strongest chapters being in Chester County. And Shannon Grady, who's the chair of the Chester County Moms for Liberty chapter, is joining us now. Shannon, thank you for joining the Conservative Voice.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you guys have been stirring up some trouble here.
Yeah, I guess that's what you want to call it, right?
Good trouble.
Rebel rousers.
That's right.
Rebel rousers of Chester County.
Yeah. So tell us, first of all, who is Moms for Liberty? I mean, what is this thing?
Well, it's a national organization, and, it came about during the COVID mandate. As people think, we're funded by dark money, yet, most of our chapters barely has $100 in our bank account. But, really it's about educating and unifying parents and letting them learn about their parental rights, especially as it pertains to education. So the goal and the mission really is educating parents on their rights, especially if their children are in schools. Because as we have, come to learn, our schools have been infiltrated, and the goal and objective of education in this country has really shifted to progressive initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously tyrannical mandates made a lot of us, quite frankly, really pissed off. So, that's kind of how Moms for Liberty was born. You had school boards and school administrators trying to muzzle children in order to attend school. So I think that really aggressive behavior and just quite frankly violations of people's rights and just woke a lot of people up, and they said, no, not on my watch.
To put this into a little bit of context, this group of mothers that have come together, and fathers too, I know, are in this group, come together, have done this in the last 4 years. But when you talk about this transition of school boards from what people that are, say, above 40 years old know, where they were focused on math and science and, social studies and learning how to read and write and analyze and read and write again, if you had a really good English teacher that made you write papers four times, right? They've gone from what that was to this ideologically driven, political agenda driven indoctrination camps. And that's really what they are. And I've gone to several school board meetings in different districts to hear these school board members talk and these administrators talk. And it's real. These people are radical. And to put it into context in terms of time, I was in a school board meeting several years ago in a school district in Southeast Pennsylvania, and they had signed their first agreement with a consulting firm to begin training their staff in this progressive ideology. It was at this point, it would be 14 years ago. So this has been building, and huge amounts of money have been put in this, but they've been building this over time. We're teaching staff in one school district after another have been trained on DEI and then all the gender ideology. And, you know, I was in a school... I was in a school about 2 years ago for some event that somebody rented out of an auditorium, and I walked around the building and I was astonished. Every single door had a rainbow flag or a transgender flag on it, and every bulletin board was decorated in sexually themed materials. When you walk in the front door of the school, there were giant banners.
Yeah.
You know, like the old banners at Nazi rallies?
It was Westchester. It was Westchester Area School District Middle School.
Yeah. And there were giant banners that were, you know, floor to ceiling that were all focused on sexuality. Yeah. And I just, you know, you would think that you'd walk into a school and it'd all be focused on algebra.
Education. Right? You know? Wow. Reading, and writing.
And the tough part about it is they use subtle cores of ways to implement it and weave it into almost every subject. You know, when you've got kindergartners, it's not so obvious what they're doing. But when you're like, I had a kindergartner and a 10th grader. So I was aware that these little, you know, it seems like friendly little games in kindergarten, what it is actually programming them for. It's all programming, social programming. And they do it under the guise of social emotional learning, mm-hmm. trauma-based learning. But it's all programming, and it all leads to it's a means to an end of you know, literally social programming of our youth. And they start it in literal kindergarten with just little subtle coercive things that, you know, may seem harmless if you're just looking at it on its face, if you're not really aware.
Right. And you know, you're talking about ages here. This is elementary and middle schools that are included in this indoctrination.
Yes, and
people say, well, what the harm? This is really just about you be you and love who you love or whatever it is. There was a report last year, the increase in non-binary students identifying as not being heterosexual. Now, first question is, why are they identifying as anything? Why is the school surveying their sexuality?
Prepubescent children.
4,000% increase in New Jersey schools. 4,000%. There is no world where that can be anything other than the impact of propaganda. Now, you look at a middle school that has sexuality-themed materials all through. And think about it from this perspective. If you're a seven-year-old or an eight-year-old or a 12-year-old, especially if you're in that sort of, you know, prepubescent period where you're starting to really question things, and you notice this propaganda everywhere, and you're saying to myself, how do I get accepted? How do I get recognized? How do I get applause? Well, you come out and say that you're not heterosexual, and they'll hold a parade for you every June for a month. So it is absolutely grooming.
It's enticement.
Right,
marketing. Yes.
Right.
So Shannon.
So back to the Title IX in general.
Please, yes.
Right. So as Beth did a great job, you know, in her articles and just, you know, following up with her, you know, explaining it, so I don't have to kind of re-say the stuff that she mentioned. But, mm-hmm. you know, the summary of the injunction, what the court decided that is that it violated the First Amendment rights, and in the rewrite itself and the regulation itself was vague and overbroad. And, you know, kind of the crux of it is that the DOE wants schools to punish students for speaking out against gender ideology or speaking out that they wish to have safety in private spaces. Mm-hmm. And actually, as of July 31st, 2024, there's 26 states enjoined in the injunction. So it's not four. There's actually 26 states now, which is great.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, you know, they have a large burden to overcome. Yeah, of the 26, you know, Pennsylvania as a state is not listed yet, but there are some, you know, a significant amount of states listed. You know, and the biggest thing, you know, that I'm trying to help educate, you know, one of the big focuses in my chapter is really I try to educate people, you know, parents especially, but our members on their rights and understanding, you know, that the agencies, this Title IX only applies to federal agencies and their employees, or, you know, the agencies that receive federal funding. All right. Students have rights. Administrators have rights. And employees of those agencies have rights. And in fact, just in July of 2024, there was a recent Supreme Court ruling, the SEC versus Jarski, where essentially they came out and said that these administrative agencies cannot adjudicate and punish people on their own accord. So even in this new Title IX rewrite, they discuss administrative law judges and basically coming up with punishments and penalties for people who speak out against gender ideology. And the Supreme Court just ruled that that's unconstitutional. So if you're an administrator or employee of a school and you do not wish to have your speech compelled, you can't be punished by some administrative agency or be adjudicated in administrative law judges.
Right.
You
it's going
to, I think Supreme it's Court literally ruled upon that.
It's going to take some time for that Chevron dismissal to work its way through these administrative organizations, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And quite frankly, in Pennsylvania, they have a lot of things to overcome. You know, not only the federal code, the federal regulation, Title 34 in education, subtitle B, Chapter 1, Part 106, actually still states that there's non-discrimination on the basis of sex. So they're not only in violation of their own federal regulation. In addition, in Pennsylvania, it would violate the Pennsylvania Constitution. So in our school board members are bound to obey and follow the Constitution. So Pennsylvania Constitution, Article 1, Section 28, has protection and I don't want to, you know, read it exactly, but on the basis of sex. So they're not only in violation of the Pennsylvania Constitution, school board directors have to take an oath of office. So if the school district decides they want to put a written policy in place that directly violates the Constitution, those school board members better think twice about it. Because you're in violation of the state constitution. You're also in violation of the Pennsylvania School Code, Section 7-740, which specifically outlines separation of the bathrooms by sex. That's still in effect. I just checked it. As of July, that section is still in effect. Bathrooms must be separated on the basis of sex. So they're in violation of the PA School Code. They're also in violation of PA Code Title 28, Health and Safety. Public bathroom facilities must be on the basis of sex. So you've got a federal code violation, you've got the PA Constitution violation, and you have two PA code violations that are still on the basis of sex. So they've got a lot to overcome in Pennsylvania. And I know some of the school districts, this has come up before when they're trying to, you know, follow the ruling in, do you remember which one it was, Ada or Gary? It was like Boyertown School District or something, possibly.
It might have been Boyertown. I keep thinking Perk, but it may be Boyertown.
But essentially, in that case, they're saying, well, we have to follow it because they're citing a decision in Bostock versus Clayton County, Georgia. And they're citing that gives them the ability to implement gender ideology. But that was a Title VII case. That was not a Title IX case. That was a workplace protection case. This is totally different. This is education. This is not a workplace. So, you know, there was one ruling in 2022 in the 11th Circuit Court, which is Florida, I believe. And if you get a chance to read that case, it was Drew Adams versus the School Board of St. John's County, Florida. And the judge's opinion in that case was just spot on and excellent. And, you know, essentially the crux of the court's opinion is this. He said sex is not interchangeable and sex is an immutable characteristic based solely at birth. And I quote, to fail to acknowledge our most basic human characteristics makes equal protection superficial. Ignoring sex also fails to protect children's privacy as the students have the responsibility to do so. Not discriminate against transgender students because everyone has a sex. And all sex students are treated equally based on sex. So the main point is gender protections is unequal protection under the law because not everybody has a gender. They're trying to subvert language to make everyone believe that sex and gender are the same, and they're not. Most of the population does not participate in gender ideology.
Right.
So you're trying to have unequal protection under the law. Everyone has a sex. Not everyone has a gender. So you can't implement a policy that violates equal protection under the law.
But,
and whether the schools like it or not, the students have rights. The employees have rights. Some administrative regulation cannot supersede their rights.
And they don't like that. And they have done everything they can do to eliminate the distinction you just drew, this difference between sex and gender. And they have desperately tried to make it not so. We've got a couple of folks.
Because a gender policy violates the rights of all students. You're violating the rights of all students.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And these are important lessons. Now, we've got a couple of callers. We've got about 6 minutes left. We're going to take a comment or question from Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, Gary, thanks for having me. Good to be on your show for the first time. I've listened to your show plenty of times, so thanks for what you do. You're a good patriot and keep up. Been listening to a couple of the callers come in, and the reason I wanted to speak is because my wife's a school teacher. She's at an administrator level. I'm not going to say in what school district, but, you know, I get to hear all the stuff, the boots on the ground as it applies into Montgomery County and Chester County. A lot of her friends are school teachers, family are administrators, and the message I want to communicate, you know, especially after listening to all the women and what you're saying, Gary, you're absolutely right. You know, somebody mentioned something about Josh Shapiro about being a conservative over a moderate. He's neither. He might portray that, but, you know, the real matter is this guy is a communist. He does not care about public education. And I say that because his kids don't even go to a public school. They go to a private Hebrew school. And I'll give you an instance. I think it was in 2022. There was a lockdown at the Hebrew school in Radnor or Haverford area. And what that means is when there's a school lockdown, it's an emergency situation. Nobody comes in. Nobody goes out. Well, sure enough, a representative from the governor's office, whether his wife or him, showed up to the school and actually pulled one of their children out of the back school. So, you know, it's not for thee, but it's for you.
Rules for thee.
You know, it's pretty much how it is. But, you know, my daughters went to Springford. They were in the Springford school system for pretty much up until they were in high school. We pulled my one daughter out first and put her over into a private school over in Malvern. And then we did it with the second daughter. And what I'm trying to communicate is if you go on to Springford's website, you know, you look at their equity, diversity, and inclusion. It's all about the hijab and the bread and Martin Luther King with satanic, what do they call it? That group,
they have clubs.
Like satanic symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. And,
right.
You know, so they're trying to almost wash out the nationality, even at the local grassroots level within our communities. And, mm-hmm. You know, I consider Springford and the national identity, you know, it was a very working class, blue collar class community filled with farms. And now it's filled with pharmaceutical companies, DuPont Chemical, GSKs, and Quest Diagnostics, and Pfizer's. And what that's brought into my community is diversity. There are no more, and I hate to say it, the white people are the diversity. You know, they're gone. So I live in a community where, you know, where it used to be mostly white people, a couple Indian people, and some black people, and some Asian people. And now it's primarily people that are being shipped from overseas, and they're being fast-tracked their visas through these pharmaceutical and these other major corporations because these DEI credits that they get and NGO credits is basically to drive out the people in the schools, in the communities. And I've seen that change in Springfield School District in the past 10 years. And that's really concerning to me. Not only that, but the education that they're teaching these kids. I watched my daughter's education suffer in Springford School District. And when we took them out and put them over at Villa Maria Academy, what a difference. Not because we're spending money, it's because there's actually a value to that. And they're not really pushing those woke DEI agenda. And I try to have that with my wife, and, you know, she sees it being a public school teacher, but, you know, she can't really talk about it. So I think, you know, everybody that's on this call and listening needs to understand that there's a lot of teaching staff and faculty that they can lose their jobs or, you know, be put on the news. And they're trying to basically, you know, do away with you. They don't want you to go with their narrative. They want you to push this narrative.
Well, Sean, Thanks for calling. I mean, that's an important perspective. We see this in a lot of communities where we had these, they were already diverse communities. There were, and everybody was living together well, but it is being transformed by the injection of folks from all over the world who are being brought here. That's not even that they're just coming naturally. Now we're down to just about a minute left. Shannon, maybe we'll switch back. Shannon, can you just give us then what comes next? Where are we going with this? What is Moms for Liberty going to do to continue this effort in the last minute? And then how do we get a hold of you? How do we track what Moms for Liberty is doing?
Well, I don't really actually know what, you know, it's current pending litigation. So I don't actually know because it's still there. But we do know that, you know, the injunction is in place. And if there are issues Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you can always just go to momsforliberty.org. It's the national website, and you can report, you can reach out to them there and try to report incidences of your school claiming that they have to implement it due to the Department of Education, or you can contact us locally. Our chapter website is M4LChescoPA.com. You can reach out to us because we have the pulse on what's locally, especially in Chester County, kind of what's going on. But as far as like what national plans on doing, I can't really speak to that.
Great. Well, Shannon, thanks so much for joining us here in the Conservative Voice. This is great work you guys are doing. We look forward to learning more about it as we go forward. And with that, we're going to close this first hour. We'll be back in a few minutes to start the second half of the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860.